If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello and welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for October 7th. I'm your host, Jan Garcia, and joining me is Tim, motherfucking Geddes.
Holy shit, I went from being like, okay, I like this, to like, whoa, wait, how long is this going to go on to? I am legitimately impressed, Janet. That was fantastic. Good for you. You got them lungs. You should swim. You know what I mean? I don't know how that much is that going to help, but like.
just start swimming. Yeah, I actually can't swim.
Just keep swimming.
No, I can't do like a lot of stuff. Like I can't swim. I can't correct. I don't know how. You know, people always say that, but then also I feel like with a pool too, like, or with, you know, the ocean or the water or whatever, it's such a specific context.
Yeah.
Like, when are we going to be by a body of water together? I don't even think I've seen you in real life outside of a square or a circle on the internet.
All right, there we go. Sorry. Good catch, Tim. I don't know why I didn't go. I know I streamed it.
Now, Janet, you know, you bring that up and that's funny. I was talking to Gia a couple days ago and you came up somehow. And I was like, we were just talking about, oh, we're going to do Games Daily together. And then she was like, have you ever met her in real life? And I was like, holy shit, I haven't. That feels crazy. Like, it feels like I have. But
I think the only kind of funny people that I've met in real life is Blessing. And I remember it's so funny when I met Blessing, too, like in person, because he was at the IGN studio for, I want to say it was our Black History Month stream. And like, I remember being like, oh, Blessing's there. And like, I kind of knew him on Twitter and like, you know, we're cordial, whatever, we were mutuals, like he followed me, I followed him. But then I was like, in my head about it a little bit, I'm like, okay, like I'm gonna go, you know, this is someone I like really respect in the industry, like I'm gonna try to like say hi to him, like I caught him in the cafeteria or whatever, well, not the cafeteria, but you know, like where you eat your lunches and shit. And I was like, oh, hey, Blessing, like I just wanted to, you know, say hi, like, you know, blah, 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 like you did great job on the stream, like thanks for being here. And it's so funny looking back at that, because like now knowing Blessing like way more on a personal level, I'm like, oh, Blessing's like such a goof, like total clown. I was like walking up to him like he was the big cheese and stuff.
Yeah,
and the thought of talking to Blessing, so, and obviously like with all of y'all, like I have a much closer relationship already, so we'd probably meet and I'd be like, yo, like, you know, great to finally meet in person. But with Blessing, like we didn't have as much of like a casual rapport, so it was like, I'm like, okay, this is like Blessing of Kind of Funny, like I got all like serious and shit, but I'm like, oh, it's just Blessing.
That is the absolute best. Janet, another thing I wanted to bring up to you is right before we went live on the show, we were talking about the Mario the anniversary Game and Watch thing that you got, and you're talking about the ball mini game, or I guess it wasn't a mini game back then, it was just a game for the Game and Watch. And it reminded me of a couple things that I feel like would be so up your alley if you had the chance to play them. Did you ever play Super Mario 64 DS?
Yes, the mini games.
The mini games seem like the most Janet Garcia stuff, and then of course, the classic Pokemon Stadium on the N64. You ever play those mini games?
Yep, Kids Club.
Yep,
always. Yep. I like hit up Kids Club the other day. It was funny because I was just like, sort of in a, I think like a bad mood or like a frumpy mood. And I was just like, you know what? I could use some joy right now. And I like boot, I have my N64 like pretty easy to set up. And I use the, like Eon Gaming has like these little adapters that like make it so you can plug in an HDMI cable. They're awesome. It's like the cheapest thing you can get outside of just having to mod it yourself. And I'm like, I don't want to mod it myself. I don't know how to mod it myself. I don't want to pay someone to mod it. So the Eon, even though it's a little bit pricey, I think it's like $125 or $150, maybe more. But it's still like in that good range if you're like really into these old consoles. So I like put in like Pokemon Stadium and I'm like, I just want to play some Kids Club. And like my boyfriend's like, are you all right? Are you having like a breakdown? I'm like, it doesn't matter. Pick up your sticks. We're going to toss some snakes. Like, we're going to eat some sushi. I have never in my life, please let me know in the chat, y'all, if you have this experience, because I've played how many hours of that sushi mini game. I could not tell you the currency of that damn game. I forget every time. I'm like, what's the good sushi? Like, this one's worth how much money? Like, I never know. I just start eating everything in sight and hoping for the best. And the CPU always waxes me.
The Kevin strategy, yeah.
Yeah. Before we get started, favorite kids club mini game in Pokemon Stadium?
I mean, I think it has to be the sushi one. It's the most memorable for sure.
The sushi one's really good. I like the snake, y'all know it's Ekans or whoever the hell, but you know, it's a freaking snake. The ring toss one, because I'm really good at it. And I like that randomly too. It'll be like, oh, you get the gold one that pops up and you got to like plan that out. I think my least favorite one is probably the Rattata run, because I just can't.
Oh, yeah. I like that one. Also, I was always a fan of that. I got the rhythm down. Yeah.
All of them are good.
Shout out to you, Pokemon Stadium. I want a Pokemon Stadium remake.
Exactly. Like, y'all out here with the Snap. And, like, the Snap, it wasn't really a remake. It was a new entry. Like, it didn't hit. Like, don't do Pokemon Stadium 2 anymore. Like, just do the old one again. But, yeah, you know, I digress. All right, let's go ahead and get into it, y'all. Today's stories include Guardian of the Galaxy's dev studio moving to a 4-day work week, Randy Pitchford stepping down as Gearbox Software president, Amazon's reaction to New World success, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, where each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Use the Epic creator code Kind of Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support Kind of Funny. And to be part of the show, head over to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in and silver members or above get the show ad-free along with the exclusive daily post show. Some housekeeping for y'all. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Pranksy and Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by DoorDash, Honey, and American Giant, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have five stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Starting with our headlining story and one of my like favorite in the bunch, Guardians of the Galaxy studio shifts to a 4-day work week. This comes over from their official website under their news category. And this is both Eidos Montreal, which is the studio that's directly developing the upcoming Guardians of the Galaxy game, and Eidos Sherbrooke will switch to a 4-day work week spread across, of course, 4 days. And I believe the hours are 32 hours. They announced this on their official website and they had a little FAQ section. So I'm going to read out some of those questions that they sort of can ask themselves to conveniently answer and kind of trim it down a little bit. So starting off with just more on this initiative and how the transition will happen. This initiative is another step towards the embodiment of the studio's values, building a healthy, creative, and sustainable work environment for our employees. Currently, our various teams are working on the development of transition plans to ensure success and maintain the highest standards in the industry. In the next few weeks, the Montreal and Sherbrooke studios will be officially closed on Fridays without changing the working conditions currently in place, nor the salaries of employees, thus switching from the 40-hour week to a 32-hour week. Does this mean that the workload of the teams will have to be condensed within 4 days? The idea is not to condense the working hours into 4 days, but rather to review our ways of doing things and our quality time invested with the aim of working better. Above all, we want to increase the productivity and well-being of our employees. Concretely, we want to reduce the time at work, but increase the quality of the time invested, whether it's on a team basis or for the studio as a whole, a promising right balance for everything. We hope that this will eliminate unnecessary time and build efficiency, for example, by reducing internal meetings from 1 hour to 30 minutes. How did the idea and the need come about for Eidos Montreal and Eidos Sherbrooke to adapt work schedules? This is the last question we'll have to round this out. We've been wondering for a while about how can an ecosystem and a company increase their efficiency without compromising the well-being of their employees. With remote working, which has transformed the way we collaborate, we had already started an important cultural transition with the implementation of a rest period, access to a personal financial advisor, access to telemedicine platform, reimbursement of mental health care and physical activity costs. Damn, y'all hiring? With the various pilot projects all over the world, whether in Iceland, in the civil service, or other examples of companies operating in technology industries, the results are conclusive. We are convinced that this renewed management of working time will help cultivate the creativity and motivation of teams and become a real driver of innovation and performance. Tim, react.
This is a huge deal. This is definitely like the first major AAA studio to do this. There's like so much that goes into it, especially with it being a Montreal studio and how many studios are popping up there. And there's a lot of competition, right? This is going to be a huge kind of get for them for talent of people kind of like looking for different options as developers to any extent of when they're looking at options up in Montreal of where they want to work. Like, yeah, not only is this AAA, but it's AAA like making some really good calls that seem to be like really kind of like looking out for the employees while still looking out for the product. It's very interesting. I think at the end of the day, like we talked about this a couple weeks ago when I'm forgetting what the studio was. I think it was
Young Horses. Bucksnax
team. Young Horses. Yep. Young Horses. Yeah. Where they announced this. And it's like, it's the reality is it doesn't matter your size, whether you're a small team or a AAA studio. It's about what is your product? What is the management? What is the systems? Who is your team? All of that stuff. And I think that at the end of the day, this stuff lives or dies on leadership and management of time and kind of expectations of employees and employees kind of understanding what those expectations are and being equipped to be able to hit them. This is great. I think it's interesting. I don't think this works for everybody, but I love that Eidos Montreal are confident it works for them and they're implementing it. So this is awesome. And I think that this is going to 100%, as we've already kind of seen shifts happen, every studio has to kind of look at themselves and start asking a lot of questions and try to come up with answers that aren't just, oh, we're going to do it this way because we've done it that way forever.
At what point do you think this could become a standard set thing, at least in the games industry? And then as a larger question, like, do you think the 4-day work week is where we're moving towards as like a society?
No, I don't. And I don't think that it necessarily should be the standard. I think that the standard should be whatever is right for each individual company and that there is no standard when it comes to that stuff. What I do think is really key and important to bring into is the most important thing in fields that involve tech, of course, that includes game development, that includes things like we do, whatever. It's the ability to adapt and not get comfortable. Know that the world is changing around you. That's what tech is, right? It is a constantly evolving thing. And to really like look at yourself and be like, what is the best way for us to move forward? At Kind of Funny, it's what we do every year. That's why we do our Kind of Funny Day, where it's like we kind of look at the last year, shed the things that aren't working, try to implement things that are working, make some changes so that it just keeps getting better and better and more efficient, more optimized, right? And I think that a huge boon for that, it has been the idea of working remote. And when it comes to a lot of these big development studios, that has just never been an option, period. It was just like, you either are in these major big cities or you're not able to work there. And that's not even an option. But because of the pandemic, one of the upsides of everything is it kind of forced everybody in these fields to get more equipped and informed on how tech works. And it made everything easier. And it also forced a lot of systems like the Google Drives of the world and the video conferencing and like so many different messaging systems to improve and to work around creating a system that works for remote work. So because of that, so many factors and so many things are being cut away. And we've kind of had the last 2 years to iron out some of the wrinkles. It's not perfect yet, but it is way better than it used to be. And I can say this as a confirmation that going forward, Kind of Funny will always be hybrid in some form. Even when we have our new studio, like we are still coming up with ways to be able to work with Janet, who's down in LA. And that has been like a core tenet of the vision of where our company's going, because why would we not do this thing? And we used to be vehemently against that for different reasons, mainly chemistry, mainly like we wanted to have the in-person vibe and all that stuff. But the world forced us to create vibes, just like we talked about at the start of the show. I've never met you, Janet, and I feel like I've known you for years. Like, it's fine, and it works, and this shows the quality's all there. That, I can speak authoritatively for what that means for content creation. There are people that can speak authoritatively for what that means for game development, and I think that Eidos Montreal, what they're saying here, it's not just them deciding to do this. It's them explaining why they decided to do this in this article that I think is the key element. People over there get it. People over there are understanding what they need to do for their product and with their team, and this seems like the answer. We'll see in a couple years, but at the end of the day, while I'm not sure that this is necessarily the answer, I do know that this, to me, proves that the leadership over there is willing to adapt, and they're trying trying and they're going to experiment. And in a couple of years, we'll see where they're at. I'm hopeful though.
Yeah, I like that you brought up the pandemic and how it's impacted the way we work. And I feel like we see this in so many examples, whether it's like professional or personal, but when life forces your hand, you will find a way. I think like human beings are incredibly resilient. And it's like, if people would have been asked like, oh, would you go like full remote with your company? I think a lot of companies would say no, but like the options are you either do this remotely or you don't do this at all. So they're like, we're gonna figure it out. And then, mm-hmm. and for the most part, everyone did. Obviously, definitely a lot of businesses really suffered. So I'm not pretending like, oh, this improved work everywhere, because we've seen so many instances of, you know, issues pop up, especially just in different industries with like, you know, God, I'm blanking on the term now, but it's not mandatory worker. What is it called? Essential workers, where it's like, oh, suddenly the retail people that no one ever seems to care about is now Target's now an essential business, and figuring out all that stuff. But for me, I do think we are moving towards the 40-hour work week as a whole, the 4-day work week as a whole, like as like humanity. I don't know how quickly we'll get there. I don't think we'll get there in my lifetime. And obviously some fields are different. Like the idea of being like a single content creator and working 4 days, I think that is kind of feasible, but it's weird because then you'd have like less stream. You'd inherently be locked in a way that I think maybe isn't conducive to some of the elements of how people create in our industry. But I certainly think across the board, like we've seen so many studies of people being more productive, happier with a 4-day work week. I actually jumped to this article written by cultureamp.com that just sort of broke down like the history of work, at least like in the United States, and how there used to be an 80 to 100 hour work week like in the 1800s, which is like impossible. Like I can't even fathom that much work. And it wasn't until like, you know, factory work and all of that sort of ended up popularizing the 40-hour work week. I think people forget that we didn't just the 40-hour work week didn't just exist. That was a movement pushed by workers and businesses and legislators, and it became standard. Like that the reason we have those 40 hours, like they come from somewhere. It's not just, oh, this is the end all be all. And I think, you know, a lot of time has passed over, you know, the passage of time, and it's a different world than it was in 1940, but we're still using the same standard time. And I think that could at least use some re-examining, and I'm glad that studios are doing that re-examining. I also really like that in this FAQ, they mentioned like a little bit of how they're doing it. And one thing they mentioned is like reducing internal meetings, and like, depending on the company you work for, if you have like a white collar job that has common meetings, and certainly blue collar, you have meetings too, but they're kind of at a different cadence and scale. I totally relate to like being in an office and feeling like there's the work I need to do, and then the stuff that's stopping me from work. And sometimes that stuff stopping me from work is necessary to do better work. So I'm not saying meetings are never useful, but so often it feels like you have these flows and they just kind of come to a halt. And in that Cultural Amp article, they mentioned like a survey from this company At Task that like surveyed work and how people spend their time. And they found that 45% is primary job duties and 40% is meetings, administrative tasks, and interruptions, and then 14% email. So I do think like looking at that, it's like, where can we trim the fat? And some of that is in those extra practices and how we can like make those more efficient. So I like that idea. And I really like that they got in front of talking about what the 4-day work week means, because I can definitely see worlds where that doesn't work out. Because again, if you're just jam packing what you've always done into a smaller amount of time, like that's just adding stress. So I like that they're being thoughtful of that, and just trying to figure out ways to make their product and make it ethically. I feel like that's just been such a huge conversation in the space. And I'm hoping that as more studios are doing these good practices, it pushes everybody to make that the new standard, where I hope that one day we can look back and be even more horrified at like the situations of crunch and things and say, wow, like, look how far we've come from that. It's crazy that people used to develop under those conditions. We know so much more now, and now we're making better games as a result. Any final thoughts before we head into our next story?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you brought up a really interesting thing about like the independent contractors, or like what that means today, which is a lot of independent creators, right? And it's like, at the end of the day, that's leadership. They are then the ones in charge of managing their own time. They are a business. And so it's like, if a 4-day work week works for them, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It might require a 6-day work week, but a 6-day work week isn't necessarily a 9-to-5. It's not necessarily 8 hours a day. And I think a very important thing to realize, and this is something that I like always think about when it comes to Kind of Funny. And as we've heard the Young Horses news and like this stuff, it's, I firmly believe that all hours are not equal. An hour in a meeting is not the same as an hour prepping a show, is not the same as an hour being on a show, all this stuff. And we need to kind of keep that in mind as we look at our work days, where some 1 hour can be equal to 3 hours of output. And I think that that's kind of the, and in, it, that can also work in the other way too, where sometimes 3 hours of time isn't necessarily, you're working, you're on the clock, but you're not really working.
I'm like, I was just tapped like, into Twitter the whole time. I'm like, yeah, oh, totally, damn, this, totally. I haven't written this review yet.
And with that, I think it all comes down to a balance of management of time and resources. And that starts with the leadership level, but then it goes down to the employees as well to make sure that they are doing their best work and working within the system to make things happen. And when it comes to meetings and stuff, it's like, there needs to be action items for meetings. There needs to be a reason that things are happening. Kind of Funny has one standing meeting a week. That's it. We get together for 30 minutes.
So good.
And we talk about stuff. And any other meeting is a one-off thing of like, hey, we need to have this conversation here. We need to plan this thing here and whatever. But it's just like, don't waste people's time. I think that's so important, because like that is how you're able to cut down hours. That is how you're able to best use the hours that you're actually putting in. But yeah, I think that it is important to keep in mind that at the end of the day, it's about what is right for the thing that you're trying to do. And like, I think that there are a lot of independent content creators that are in over their heads. And if they were to just work a little harder at optimizing, they could work a lot less to get even more.
You know, I'm feeling really attacked right now as an independent content creator. But no, you're totally right. I love the phrase that not all hours are equal, because I think that's true. And something that I try to remind myself as I look at my own hours and start trying to like log, okay, how much time am I really putting into things? And then what kind of work week do I want to gun for hours wise? How many days off do I want to have? And what am I doing with my time? And it's like such, like, you know, and obviously we work in a very specific industry that like might not be relatable to a lot of people listening, but it's like, having that self-awareness as like a freelancer of sometimes my workday does include like this big break of time or running some errands or taking a nap, so that when I wake up and I do my stream or I do content, y'all get my best self, my rested, ready to go self. And like, that is part of my workflow, like taking those breaks and being prepared and showing up and giving it your all at every piece of content that you do as much as you possibly can. And I think too, like, That kind of dips into like the, I guess, unconventional work structures too, where you can have a 6 day work week, but not even work 40 hours. And I think like part of that definitely plays a role. I saw someone in chat say this could have been an email. And that is so true. Yes, there are a lot of meetings where it's like, is this here because we need it here? Or is it here because it seems like it'd be good to constantly be checking in on metrics and how we're doing? It's like the illusion of, I think, striving for improvements while you're really just taking a lot of people's time. And I'm so impressed to hear that y'all have so few meetings and do so much. I think that's really impressive. And yeah, I think, look, it's always worth examining that. And how can you optimize? What's the most optimized, joyous, productive workflow you can create for yourself? Whatever that means for you. And I'm really excited to see, you know, what these studios put out and what they end up learning. You know, I really hope to hear more about like a sort of retrospective, like, you know, maybe was it gamedeveloper.com now? No longer Gamasutra. Thank God. I would love to see like some reflections on that, because I'm sure these studios are going to learn so much in the process of doing this and have so many challenges, but also successes. So I really hope we hear more stories like this, but also stories reporting back on what was taken away and what kind of came out of it. But yeah. All right, let's jump to our next story, which is Randy Pitchford steps down, mostly, sort of, kind of. I'm pulling from an article written by IGN's Matt Kim with the headline, Gearbox's Randy Pitchford steps down as Gearbox Software president, remains as Gearbox Entertainment CEO. Here are the details. Gearbox Software has announced that former chief technology officer Steve Jones will now serve as the new president of Gearbox Software following a leadership shuffle. Gearbox Entertainment co-founder Randy Pitchford will still serve as CEO and president of the Gearbox parent company and shift his focus towards film and TV as the president of the newly formed Gearbox Studios. Was that confusing? Well, buckle up. Basically, the video game development wing of Gearbox, responsible for games like Borderlands, will now be run by Jones. Meanwhile, Gearbox's parent company, Gearbox Entertainment, which was acquired by the Embracer Group earlier this year, will be overseen by Pitchford. Furthermore, Pitchford will serve as president of a new division called Gearbox Studios, which will oversee the company's film and TV projects, starting with the upcoming Borderlands live-action movie. And the first thing I thought of this when I read it was, like, this explains, like, that weird E3 moment, which was very entertainment-focused. Like, I don't know if that was sort of a little bit that of that angle. But, yeah, what are your thoughts on this? Are you invested in what's going on at Gearbox? Are you a fan of those games? Are you looking forward to, like, their entertainment verticals?
No, to answer your question there. But the real, and that's just me. I know that there's a ton of fans of Borderlands and stuff at Kind of Funny. But this is news that I saw it pop in my inbox last night. And I read the headline of it. And I was just like, oh, shit, it's finally happening. And then you start reading, you're like, oh, no, it's not finally happening. It's just kind of shifting things around a little bit. But Pitchford's still there. Okay, sure, I guess. Like, I don't really know what to think about this. I don't know what the real reason is, if it is just like, hey, they're growing, so they need more leadership because they are doing stuff they've never done before with the entertainment studios type of shit. So it's like, cool, we're going to focus on games and Randy's going to focus on that stuff. And that just, it is what it is. Or are these moves investment moves where they're trying to please people that are the investors? And, you know, there's been a lot of negative press about Randy and they don't want to be involved in that stuff as much. I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way, where I also first read this and was like, oh, this is like a big shift. And then it's like, oh, I mean, it definitely can mean different things for like the development side of things, his like lack of involvement. I don't know how much we'll feel that in the actual games, or if we're, you know, that stuff's always hard to pin down. But yeah, I did read this also the same way as like, oh, Randy Pitchford's finally out. And then it's like, oh, now he's just working on other stuff. So I mean, I think there's a couple ways to look at this. One is that angle of sort of being like, surprised that this isn't what it initially seemed like it was at a quick glance at a first headline. And then the other thing is, I feel like we're seeing a lot of these kind of internal shifts, just like even putting all the problematic stuff aside, just people shifting roles to kind of let other people take the reign. And I think we'll see more of that as like franchises get deeper and deeper into their like developing history of like, okay, well, what's going to be sustainable for, you know, forever. Obviously, I'm not completely versed in the background of Steve Jones's career and where he kind of sits in the industry in terms of like these companies. But I think there is a bit of like passing the torch, but then also shifting. I think it also just speaks to like the growth of, you know, Gearbox's parent company and what they're doing there. And then it also like, of course, reminds me of how much games and entertainment as like a combo and as like, you know, turning games into films and television shows has been like so on the rise lately. And obviously it had its surgence like a long time ago, and now it's kind of in that like upswing again. And yeah, I can't say I'm totally super excited at the thought of like really any game adaptation. Obviously I'm looking forward to like what HBO does with The Last of Us, but if you like ask me like, do you want HBO to make The Last of Us show, I'm like, I don't really care too much about there being a Last of Us show, because for me that love of that IP still will be rooted in where I found it. And then I'm also not like a big Gearbox fan. Like, I played Borderlands 3, it's fine. There's a lot of guns. There's some bad writing. Like, I wasn't a fan of Borderlands. But yeah, that's kind of my read on this. So I don't know. We'll see if this means that we're going to see more stuff from that kind of entertainment vertical, and if we're kind of see those things branch out. Obviously, they have that, was it Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, which is not a Borderlands game, but like is a Borderlands game situation. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, the entertainment vertical stuff is really interesting, and it's different than it's ever been because of the streaming wars going on right now. And when you look at all the major streaming platforms, it's interesting that Sony is pretty much the only one that makes movies that doesn't have its own streaming platform. You know, Universal has Peacock, Disney Plus, it's Disney Plus, right? I don't need to explain that more. Like, so it's interesting with Sony, with PlayStation, they got their PlayStation Studios or Sony Studios, whatever they're calling it, the PlayStation TV division, working on their TV shows. And, you know, we got the Uncharted movie that is semi-involved in that, but whatever, there's a lot going on. I am of the standpoint of like, I don't need video games to be made into movies or TV shows, but I think that they totally can work. I don't think that they have worked yet, but I think that they have more than the potential to. Like, comic book movies didn't work until they did, and then they did.
That's so true.
So it's like, I think that Last of Us, I'm very excited for it, because I think that especially all the information on that I'm stoked for the team working on it. I'm like, cool, they're doing it. They're doing this all right. After this game's daily, we're going to be reacting to the Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City trailer. So we'll see where that goes. But I think that there will be a point that video game movies and TV shows are beloved. And I think that it's going to take a lot of missteps to get there. But at the end of the day, we're moving towards a subscription-based future for video games, as evidenced by Game Pass and all of the other, you know, Ubi, whatever the hell, all the different ones there are. But like Game Pass is the best example. But look how often Game Pass has deals where it's like, cool, get Game Pass. You also get Disney Plus. You also get like these tastes of some streaming platforms. You've got to imagine the ultimate goal is these companies being like, hey, get this one service that allows you to get video games and movies and this and that, whatever. So it's
just the Last of Us Live.
It's inevitable future.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So future is we got a 4-day work week. Mm-hmm. Game media is good now, mm-hmm. like yeah. media based games. And we have even more streaming platforms to choose from. And they're all weirdly bundled. And Amazon is making games, and the games actually are good, which we're already kind of in that future a little bit, yeah. which brings me to our next story, which is Amazon's new CEO flexes a bit after New World's receptions. For this, I go to GameSpot's Eddie Makuch with the headline, Janet, New World CEO.
Janet, yep. No, I need to stop you. I need to stop you right there. Congratulations. Congratulations on the best segue you ever did. I'm a huge segue fan.
Oh, thank you.
That was seamless. That was so good. Every once in a while, it just works out. And oh, you made that work so good. So congratulations.
It really does. You set me up. You know, you tossed it and I just knocked it out of the park. You know,
you did.
It's that rapport. It's the Garcia Geddes Information Squad rapport. You can only get it here. Exclusive mm-hmm. to Kind of Funny. New World headline, New World CEO has a message for people who doubted Amazon. Speaking Tuesday at a GeekWire event, as reported by Bloomberg, Jassy acknowledged, who's like the CEO, acknowledged Amazon's struggle in the world of video games in recent years. He even specifically referred to a previous Bloomberg story about Amazon's shortcomings with regards to gaming, which I think is kind of funny when you think of like Bloomberg reports on them throwing shade at Bloomberg. So anyway, I digress. The article continues. There were a lot of articles written, people saying things like, Amazon knows how to build everything but games. Why can't they build games? Jassy said. It takes a few before you find a hit or several, but they didn't lose their resolve. Amazon shooter Crucible was one of the company's failed gaming endeavors, while Amazon also canceled a game called Breakaway. The publisher was going to make a Lord of the Rings MMO 2 before it fell apart as well. You're going to have some games fail spectacularly, Jassy said in the same speech. Jassy mentioned that he believes video games could become the, quote, largest entertainment category over the long haul, Bloomberg reported. Amazon's founder and former CEO, Jeffrey Bezos, has also addressed New World's success. He said on Twitter, after many failures and setbacks in gaming, we have a success. So proud of the team for the persistence. View setbacks as helpful obstacles that drive learning. Whatever your goals are, don't give up, no matter how hard it gets. Thank you, Jeffrey Bezos, for that. The inspiring as ever, Jeff. Yeah. But there we go. That is sort of their reaction to New World. Have you played New World? And are you surprised by the reception, the positive reception of New World so far?
I have not played New World. I am very surprised by the positive reception to it. But I am only surprised because of how out of it I am. I remember Andy's been talking about this for a long time, and like he kind of called this one where he's just like, I think this one's going to be a big deal. And boom, here it is. People are loving it. And, you know, hey, at the end of the day, I hope that the shit succeeds. It's like the same shit as all the people that when Google Stadia was announced and everyone was just like, ah, fuck this. It's like, you should want this to work. Like, why are we trying to hate on these ideas and like this stuff that's pushing stuff forward? Like, come on. And then inevitably when it's not good, it's just like, oh, I told you so. It's like, that shouldn't be the attitude. We should want this to be able to exist in addition to how we're normally playing games already. Like, it only makes things better. But this is an example for me where it's like, yeah, Amazon has so much money. They have so much ability to do interesting, cool things. And especially with them owning Twitch, like there is potential for them to enhance the Twitch experience and make interactive games that are with streamers and people consuming the being in Twitch chat and all that stuff. It's like there's so much potential for cool stuff, as well as potential for classic style games like MMOs that they're doing a great job with now. Like, that's very cool to see. I hope they continue to succeed.
Yeah, I also was in the same boat where I haven't played, like, it's just not my genre really. So the chance of me playing an MMO, it's like I'd have to have like a lot of a nice window of time where I could really dig into it and give it a fair shot. I'm still kind of looking for you know, a way into that genre. And then let alone like the Amazon involvement, I'm like, oh, they haven't like done anything in a really long time that was, you know, super worthy of attention. So for this to kind of drop, and for me, I also like wasn't in tune with it, where I wasn't hearing the rumblings of people sort of calling that it'd be good. So when it came out and everyone was like, oh yeah, it's so good, like, you know, we were like squadding up or whatever. I don't play MMOs, so I don't know any of the terminology, you know. We're out there, we're doing the thing, having an adventure, I guess, right? Something like that. Like, I was really surprised by how well it's doing. So yeah, this could be, you know, the start of something big for that vertical. And someone in the chat, Errol, mentioned on the Twitch chat, people don't want corporations controlling everything, I guess, like big corporations, sort of in reference to the reaction to Google Stadia and maybe like some of the reception to Amazon. I think that's kind of twofold. Like with Google, it was definitely people were like, this is going to suck, it's not going to be good, and it's not the right time for it. There was sort of a pushback to the idea, in my view, more than like it being Google. I think with Amazon, it's more of a reaction to what they've produced, where they haven't really done anything until now. And then also a combination of like, there are plenty of people who aren't a fan of how massive Amazon is and Amazon's practices and all these other hangups that you might have with the company. But I do think in reference to the idea of not wanting like big corporations coming in and like getting a stronghold, I mean, Microsoft and Xbox, right? Like they weren't always like, a lot of these companies weren't always just making games. Like they started from other places. I mean, even Nintendo wasn't originally making video games. They kind of broke into that market and now that's their core identity. Same can be said for kind of all these players in the space, for like the larger ones, at least. Obviously, we see some small things pop up, like, you know, Playdate's going to drop. Sometimes we see like niche consoles or different like slices of the market. But in terms of the big players, you kind of need like a lot of money and power to be able to really break in, because especially with games becoming more and more expensive to make. So unfortunately, or kind of like a just by result, by design, it's always going to be the bigger players. And that just kind of is how it is. At the end of the day, for me, I just want there to be good games and, you know, good stuff made, more people collaborating. And from that, I think that another benefit too of just more places in the space, like it can create more opportunities for collaboration. And maybe those developers, you know, they get their start at Amazon, maybe they go form their own thing. Like, I just want good studios and good places for people, which hopefully an Amazon game studio is run well. Like, I guess there's some hesitation there as well, but yeah, I just want the games to be good, and you know, hopefully all the other stuff falls in line as well.
Absolutely. Well said.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsors.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by DoorDash. Picture this, it's been a long week, you're glued to your couch, you're in your pajamas. In fact, you haven't seen your real clothes in weeks, and then it happens, your stomach rumbles. But don't get off your couch. Why don't you treat yourself tonight with something from DoorDash? DoorDash brings you what you want to eat right now, right to your door. But you also get groceries and other essentials delivered with DoorDash. Get drinks, snacks, and other household items in under an hour. With over 300,000 partners, you can support your neighborhood's go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Popeyes, Chipotle, and Cheesecake Factory. Snowbike Mike loves DoorDash. He loves nothing more than getting his iced chai lattes delivered to him every morning so he can be fresh and ready to go for the day's work. For a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code GAMES2021. That's 25% off, up to $10 value, and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code GAMES2021. Don't forget, that's code GAMES2021 for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply. We are also brought to you by Honey. I'm about to blow your mind. Did you know there's a wrong way to shop online? I got news for you, buddy. If you're not shopping with Honey, you've been doing it wrong. Honey is the free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best ones it finds to your cart. Honey supports over 30,000 stores online and is super, super easy to use. Say you're shopping on one of your favorite sites and you go to checkout. The Honey button will drop down and all you gotta do is click apply coupons and wait as Honey works its magic looking for codes it can use for that site. If it finds a working coupon, you'll watch the price drop. Kevin and Tim use Honey all the time, especially now as we're ramping up the new studio. They're never not shopping online without Honey because they like saving money, and I like when they save me money. It's great. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on free savings. It's literally free and installs in a few seconds. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast. We never recommend something we don't use here personally, so get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/games. That's joinhoney.com/games. We're also brought to you by American Giant. American Giant does a lot more than make the greatest hoodie ever made, which is already kind of a big deal. That's why they produce everything in America, with the added bonus of getting to obsess over every single detail of their clothing at every step. American Giant began with the belief that local makes better, every detail matters, and the clothes you wear every day should be beautiful and durable. The folks over at American Giant call themselves that because they know the power of supporting local manufacturers, communities, and workers. Tim is a hoodie fanatic, and he swears by these American Giant hoodies. He loves this company, and you will too. But hey, guess what? They didn't stop at the greatest hoodie ever made. They expanded well beyond it, continuing to revolutionize your everyday wardrobe and leaving things better than they were before. Explore American Giant's collection of durable essentials at American-Giant.com. And you get 20% off when you use the code KFGD at checkout. That's 20% off at American-Giant.com, promo code KFGD.
One.
Yo, and we are back. Let's talk about PlayStation top downloads for September. Also, I do want to point out this is on the PlayStation blog, and they have their own charts separate for free-to-play games and VR games. That way, all the charts aren't just like
Art.
Fortnite's killing it again, because Fortnite's like always super heavily downloaded. Tim, I know you have looked at these lists. Yes, these lists yet. So let's do top 10 PS5 games this September. What games do you think are in the top 10? And I'll just let you know if they're here or not. We'll go real quick.
Top 10 games on PSN downloaded. On PS5.
Yes.
In September.
Yes. You got PS5. You're out here downloading. You're
Kena.
Shopping.
Kena is on the list. It's not going to be on there, number one, but it's on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Deathloop.
Yep.
I'm going to say, guarantee on the list is an NBA 2K game. I just don't know if a new one is out now. So I'm going to cheat and just say NBA 2K 20-something.
Yep.
That'll be on the list. A GTA 5, probably.
No, that one's not on the list.
Shucks.
But wait till that new version comes out, and then it will definitely be on the list.
Oh, probably Ghost Director's Cut.
Mm-hmm.
Death Stranding Director's Cut?
Yes.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yo, you're killing it. I think you only missed one so far. So you can do four more, or you can just be like, I don't have any more ideas.
I'm just trying to rack my brain about like what games would have came out that would sell well.
It's hot in the streets on PS5.
Madden 22. Uh-huh. Yes.
Uh huh.
Fuck yeah.
No, you're doing so well. Okay, yeah, three left.
I don't. Jet.
No.
No. I don't know. I'm out. I'm out of steam here.
Okay, that's fair. All right, let's run down the list. We'll go from top to bottom. Number one is NBA 2K22. Number two, Deathloop. Number three, Kena: Bridge of Spirits. Number four, Diablo 2 Resurrected. Someone on chat said Toem. No, but Toem is really good. Like Greg Lee, like I said, I haven't gotten around to it yet. Very cool.
Should have called Diablo.
Chicory's also not on their chat. Five, Madden NFL 22. Six, A Ghost of Tsushima's Director's Cut. Seven, Tales of Arise. Eight, Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales. Nine, Death Stranding Director's Cut. And 10, this one surprised me, Life is Strange True Colors. Those are the top 10 for PS5. Let's run through PS4 real quick, and then we'll kind of talk about compare and contrast real quick and see what surprises may have been on here. So this is the PS4 downloads. We got NBA 2K22. Mm-hmm. Number two, Madden NFL 22. Number three, Diablo 2 Resurrected. Number four, GTA 5. Number five, Minecraft. Number six, Red Dead Redemption 2. Number seven, Need for Speed Heat. Number eight, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. Number nine, Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales. And 10, Insurgency Sandstorm. Does anything on this list surprise you on any of the two lists?
I made the mistake of saying GTA 5 because it's not on PS5 yet. That's why it's not on the list. It would have been otherwise. The thing that surprises me about the first list is Kena being as high as it is. Number three, like that is really fucking awesome for that studio's first game, smaller team, and damn, PlayStation exclusive. And they did it and it's doing the damn thing. Like, that is very impressive. Makes me very happy. I want a sequel to Kena so bad because I loved Kena, but you just see the potential of what a sequel could be. It's so rough around the edges that it's like, oh, just a simple tweak here and a little fix there would make the sequel so much better. So, yeah, great news.
Yeah, I also was pretty surprised by that just because that's a pretty high ranking. Like, to have it above the fact that, like, Madden NFL isn't higher, I guess, is a little bit surprising to me. But, yeah, to have that be so high up, above Diablo 2, above, like, other, you know, larger, like, established franchises, because mm-hmm. this is a new IP, I think is really impressive. And then I was surprised Life is Strange True Colors is on there, because I feel like, even though I think those games do sell well, in terms of top 10, like, I'm just surprised it broke through at that degree, because it is a little bit more niche of a genre. It's a multiple entry in a franchise. I do know a lot of people are recommending this as a starting point, which I am one of those people. If you've never played Life is Strange game, just jump to straight to True Colors, you'll be fine. But I'm still sort of surprised to see that in there. Yeah, I like the spread of games on PS5. And I feel like it speaks to, like, looking at PS5 versus PS4, I feel like we're starting to see, like, the vibes of PS5 versus, like, the ever-aging vibes of the PS4. And it makes me excited as, like, a PlayStation 5 owner to, like, we're finally kind of starting to get in there where we get a couple things that are only on PS5, or we get, like, even if it's just, like, we're maxing out the potential, something like, you know, the Director's Cut, which you can play on PS4, but it's like, yeah, but, like, it's really exciting if you're on something like PS5 where you can get the most of the hardware and of those games. So I feel like the top 10 on PS5 is pretty fresh and exciting, and then the top 10 on PS4 is, like, a little bit mixed, right? And obviously there's some games that just always have a stronghold on the audience, like GTA and Minecraft, but, like, you know, the top games on PS4 are giving Black Friday deals to me a little bit.
Interesting. I mean, yeah, it's funny to look at the PS4 list of just the top 10. And in that 10, I'm not going to name, like, the specific title of the franchise because that's almost irrelevant to the conversation. NBA 2K, Madden, Grand Theft Auto, Minecraft, Red Dead Redemption, Call of Duty. 6 of the top 10 are games that you can just kind of rely on to just be there always for the rest of time. And it's like, sure, the iteration of it might change, but they're just there. And then the other ones I didn't name in that were Spider-Man, Miles Morales, Insurgency Sandstorm, which I wouldn't have expected. That's kind of random. Diablo 2, which, cool, new game coming out. Like, that makes sense, it charts. And then Need for Speed Heat, which, that must have been a sale or something. Like, that must have just been, like, you know, something happened with promotion to get a lot of people.
You trying to get
that
behind the wheel? You trying to heat it up? I actually forgot any of the details of Need for Speed Heat.
That's the Miami one, I think. The Miami colored one, which looks
dope. The strongest memory I have of Need for Speed Heat, I think, is, like, driving straight into, like, a body of water or a pool. Well, just, like, going around the world. But yeah, I think that's a good observation where it is, like, whenever you have the, like, heavy rotation things in the top 10, to me that says that there wasn't anything interesting enough to knock it out of there, because that's sort of when you see, like, those common games fall, and you see this across, like, every platform. There's always, like, those couple games that are always going to be charting all the time forever, but when you have, like, a lot of interesting, compelling releases, like, things can eventually, you know, knock them down and shake it up. And obviously, you know, we see the sports sim stuff on PS5 as well, but yeah, this also is a reminder that I know I need to play Tales of Arise. I'm very intimidated, it's so long, I don't really do JRPGs that often, which the good news of that, I'm like, I almost hope I could play a little bit of it and not like it, because then I don't have to play more. Like, I'm worried I'm gonna think it's good and then be like, I don't have 60 hours to commit to this.
Yeah.
But yeah, anything from this list that you haven't played that you want to play on the top 10 PS5?
I still haven't made my way all the way through Deathloop. I'm like, that's just one of those games where I wasn't on the review with you guys. So I'm just kind of like, hey, there's no rush for this. So yeah, I'm like, I'm halfway through, I want to say, and I'm fucking loving it. It's so damn good.
That's awesome.
But yeah, otherwise, the other ones, Ghost is another one I need to get into at some point and actually play through Director's Cut. But an interesting thing I wanted to bring up from the chat here is, give me one sec. I want to find this.
Also, Deathloop, while you're looking for that, Deathloop is my game of the year right now. We'll see if it holds firm. I know yours is still Artful Escape, yes?
It is Artful Escape, but I want to give a major shout out to Halo Infinite's multiplayer, which is a transformative experience that brings me back to being 13 years old, but modernizes it in a way that I'm just like, holy shit, this is so much damn fun. But yeah, I so far And I'm not expecting the campaign to blow me away at a game of the year standard. So Artful Escape would still be my number one. I am still looking for this. I'm sorry, I'm not going to give you credit for saying it, but somebody in the chat was like, it's interesting to look at the PS4 list and it starts to feel last gen. Like it is, yes. We're finally at a point where the PS5 list and the PS4 list like is showing why a PS5 matters or why next gen is here with things like Kena and Deathloop. So pretty cool.
Yeah.
And like even the director's cuts, which I you know, that's kind of cheating, but it's like, that's what the Switch did to succeed for so long as well.
You need to.
But you know, this is just going to continue to just get heavier and heavier with PS5 exclusive titles. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I feel pretty similarly. That's kind of something I voiced like near the top of like at least this segment, where it finally is starting to feel like we are getting there. Though having a PS5, I will say like I'm totally obsessed with it. Loved it since day one. Don't want to go back in any way, shape, or form. Even just the design, which I know is like still contentious and like it is kind of ugly, but like I like that it's just like a tall, kind of weird looking contraption, little skyscraper on my desk. Like one time I had to swap that out for the PS4 because I need to like upload a save or something, and I'm just like, oh, like it just looks so like dated now. I'm like, I don't want anything to do with this thing. Loving my PS5 and cannot wait to have this, you know, the full generation with my PS5 and all my consoles.
Edwin Rivera in the chat was the person that said it, so thank you. Good point.
Yeah, shout out. All right. Speaking of sports sims that are always ranking, let's talk about one sports sim that might have a new name. EA is exploring the idea of dropping the FIFA name. This comes from Tom Phillips at Eurogamer. The article reads, future FIFA games may give up the rights to use the FIFA name, EA has said. In a recent blog post, EA mentioned it was currently exploring the idea of renaming the franchise. This means we're reviewing our naming rights agreement with FIFA. EA Sports boss Cam Weber said, which is separate from all our other official partnerships and licenses across the football world. In other words, FIFA 23 may be called something else next year, though expected to still contain the same wide array of licensed clubs and footballers. EA specifically called out the various leagues it has exclusive rights to, such as the UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues, Premier League, Bundesliga. Don't expect those to go anywhere. And I realize that some people also... I feel like people know this and it's common knowledge, but like FIFA as a name, like you might be wondering, oh, where does that come from? It's the federation, right? That exists to govern football and to develop the game around the world. Like it's like how NBA 2K, like the NBA is a thing that exists outside of games. It's that kind of situation. Yeah, this is, you know, well, first of all, Tim, I know you're not a FIFA boy, but any surprised by this? Do you think it'd be weird to have it be a different name?
I do think it'd be weird. I don't think it'd be the end of the world. I think the name recognition does go a long way with FIFA, but I think that the majority of FIFA players, it doesn't matter what the game's called. They know what it is. They know where to look for it. And it's like, they're going to just buy it. It's not like, I doubt there are many people like walking into gaming stores being like, oh, I guess I'll get this FIFA game that I know nothing about, that wouldn't just walk in and be like, oh, I guess I'll get this, whatever the fuck else they call it, the World Cup game or whatever. I don't know. I have no idea what they would call it. But it's funny to look at the stuff and like the licensing of sports and all that, where it's like, cool, we have, you know, NBA 2K, we have NFL 2K, or at least we did, whatever. And then we just have Madden named after John Madden.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. That is funny. But like, that's like that's so iconic in Madden though. Like, you know, when I first started, I actually did play Madden for a while. I feel like most people don't know this about me. I played around like Madden 03. I was really heavy into. I think that was the one that was on the GameCube. But, you know, just whatever year it was, y'all, and you'll figure it out. But yeah, I played a lot of it because my brother was really into it. And he's like, I need someone to play with me, you know, and I'm like, all right. And we started with like a huge gap of skill between us because he actually knows football, too. So it's like, well, obviously, knowing the sport makes it easier to be good at the sim of it. And I would just start out like, I'd ask Madden everything, man. I ain't make one call when I first started. I ain't make one call myself. I'm like, you already know. It's basically like I was just kind of like a slightly more advanced but also worse CPU, essentially. I'm like, I'm just
That's
asking
so
Madden.
So funny. What to I do. Love that. I mean, and I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
For me, it was Madden 04. But yeah, same idea. My friend would play and I'd play with him. And I'm like, I don't even know what the fuck I'm doing. But it was fun. Yeah,
it was. And like, we just, you know, in a nice way, something I recommend to everybody who might have like skill gaps in your household or with your friends, like just have, and this only works if like everyone isn't like super egotistical, but just have them pick like a way better team. Like that's how we started off, where my brother had like a really, really like the lowest level team you could have. And I had like the superstar, all-star, like best team in the league. And then eventually, as I got better at the game, we're like, okay, now we can just pick whatever team. Like, you know, I would be like the Oakland Raiders like all the time. Like, I still remember, I have so many fond memories of that game specifically, of like, because my brother was better than me, and like having that moment where I'm like, okay, your quarterback just got injured. Like, you're fucked now. I got this. And then I remember it was like a Thanksgiving. We were like getting ready to go to my cousin's house. And I'm like, I'm going to win. It's all set up. You got an injury. Like, I'm good. But then my mom's like, oh, I have to braid your hair to go to your cousin's house. Like, you know, I would have won. And he's like, technically, we'll never know. And I'm like, oh, you're right. You're right.
Love that.
Yeah, pain, so much pain. See, nowadays we could just suspend the game or something and wouldn't have these problems. But
exactly,
that was my one and only delve into the American football side of things. But I've been playing FIFA since, I think FIFA 2016 was the title that I got into. I do think it'd be weird. I feel like it might hurt sales potentially. Like, I wonder how much of this is, we're wondering if we care about having this name, and we're wondering if we want to spend the money that it takes to keep this name. Like, how I'm sure, you know, money always plays a role in everything, even though no one ever talks about it because it makes you seem like kind of shiesty, even though it's a business. But I hope they keep the name. I feel like I can't imagine it being called anything else. And I know, like, well, there's that old saying, right? A rose by a different name. Is it, would it smell as good, or does smell as good? I actually don't remember. It's kind of important to the analogy. But I don't know.
I'm gonna go with wood because that makes it.
It would smell good.
I love that. It sounds
so. That part's true. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just know though, if they ever do. Oh my god! Someone in chat said it was the milkman said fake injury simulator 2023. Hilarious and very accurate. There's a lot of floppers in soccer, but I do know that if they do change it for next year, oh my god. Oh. You know, rip to the GameStop employees, where people are going to come in and they're going to be asking, hey, do you guys have the new FIFA? And they're going to say yes, but it's not called FIFA. And like, I just hate that they're going to have a conversation all the live long day. So sorry if that's you, if you're listening and you work at GameStop. And if this change happens, get ready to explain this to every single customer forever. But FIFA's name or lack of name is so far away. If I want to know what is coming to mom and grab shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Do, 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 do.
Yeah. I was straight up the Super Mario 64 theme, and I loved it.
I honestly, like, don't even know what I do there. I just do the same sound every time, and I have no source. In my mind, I'm just like, this is what we do. But out today, we got a bunch of stuff out today. Far Cry 6 on PS5, PS4, Series X/S, One, and PC. No Longer Home on Xbox One and Switch. Pretty Girls Mahjong Solitaire on Switch. Creepy Tales 2 on Switch. Prehistoric Life Puzzle Switch. Panda Ball on Switch. Jackaxe on Switch. Drum Box on Switch. Sophia's World on Switch. Panmorphia on Switch. See, people are asking, like, what am I playing on my Switch? It answers itself, people. Balloon Pop Learning, Letters, Numbers, Colors, Games for Kids on Switch. The Lightbringer, Switch and PC. Business Tour Deluxe, Switch. The Marauder Chronicles, Curse Over Valdria on Switch. Lotus Bloom on Switch. Infinite Corp Cyberpunk Card Game on Switch. Gang Beasts on Switch. Age of Darkness, Final Stand on PC. Whisper Trip, Chapter 1 on PC. And Blade of Darkness on PC. Also, you know, I pulled this from Kotaku's, like, you know, what's out this week whenever I'm doing this, as most of us do. And I always think about how, since I kind of just, like, I'm like, y'all could mess with me and insert any name here, and I would just not know.
So
like, and I have that fear every second of every day. Tim, do you want to grab the You're Wrong so I read out tomorrow's, and, well, there's only one day left tomorrow, who the hosts are. It's me, and it's Blessing. Hey. That's Friday. Hey. And if you're watching live on Twitch, what do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, we are going to live react to the Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City movie trailer, and then... it's another one of the big ones. Metal Gear Solid 3 stream with Barrett, Courtney, and Blessing, and Mike. And I think that's it. I'm not sure, but stay tuned. It's going to be fun.
Nope.
And then You're Wrong. Nanobiologist writes in with the only thing, saying PlayStation TV Studios called PlayStation Productions.
There we
Thank
go.
You. Thank you very
Thank you for
much.
That insight. Mm-hmm. An almost completely flawless run. So yeah, make sure you catch that stream and subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays if you end up catching it later and not live. this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily, where each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv Kinda Funny Games, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those who are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.